Jay Mariotti here, and I'm horrified by any foolish suggestion that an NBA commissioner and his players should simply march into Shanghai and condemn China for its political policies. That's what some politicians and activists want Adam Silver and LeBron James to do this week. And other than maybe triggering World War III, I cannot understand what that would accomplish. In fact, I cannot think of a response more asinine amid the international panic caused by Daryl Morey's historically explosive tweet than this bit of madness. Having an American sporting icon, LeBron, grab a microphone and then tell 1.4 billion Chinese the following. 1. He believes in a free and open society. 2. He supports the right to free speech. And 3. He condemns a Chinese Communist Party that violates human rights, bullies Hong Kong, and tries to push around American companies like a dictatorship. Yeah, that's about as smart as Morey, the general manager of the Houston Rockets, an immensely popular team in China, supporting Hong Kong's independence in a now infamous hot take that has strained tensions between China and the U.S. and threatened the NBA's business relationships in that basketball-mad country. Most reasonable Americans, such as myself, can agree that Silver looked like a greedy SOB in capitulating to the Chinese after Morey's tweet, prioritizing money over country. We also can agree that Silver looks rather wishy-washy in saying the league is, quote, apologetic, unquote, over the outcome. China's state broadcaster refusing to air two preseason games this week between the Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets, yet also refusing to apologize, quote, for Daryl exercising his freedom of expression, unquote. Yes, Silver is trying to have it both ways, trying to maintain his ATM machine ties with China, while Harden, who earlier this week had apologized to China, did politely, ever so discreetly, endorse free speech. James Harden, diplomat? My lord.
Yeah, we all have freedom of speech. That's the world we live in. You know, everybody should, how they feel and their thought process, be able to speak it. You know, obviously some people are going to feel some type of way, some people are going to agree. That's just the world we live in. I'm here for Adam Silver.
Unimpressed, the Chinese government canceled an NBA Cares event in Shanghai and still might cancel the games. Oh, yes. American free speech and American capitalism colliding ever so awkwardly in mainland China.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti, the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again. Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true.
Fuck you!
He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years.
For 17 years.
Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood.
Back from his day job in Hollywood.
For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
Point being, America's freedoms should not be defiantly defended by NBA players, including James, because they happen to be playing in China this week. It should be clear by now that most sports people are not equipped to comment on world events, and certainly not the geopolitics of rival superpowers. I mean, does anybody really care what Daryl Morey thinks about Hong Kong? How self-serving is that? And seeing how the NBA and the Rockets might be out multiple billions here, shouldn't Morey be fired if the success barometer in a major sports league is money? If anything, sports people have gladiator mentalities that make them think in warfare terms, as we've seen when the militaristic Greg Popovich excoriates President Trump. I don't care if LeBron looks like a corporate sellout, as some have said, because he's a prominent face of Nike and that he and other NBA stars, such as Houston's James Harden and Russell Westbrook, sell a whole lot of sneakers over in China. This is no time with an apocalyptic presidential campaign ahead for American sports figures to do anything but talk about games and competition. That's it. They are not gods. They certainly are not diplomats. In many cases, they simply aren't capable of articulating what they might feel. These are sports people, and anybody who thinks they can stand up for what's right on a global stage should look at the wreckage Maury left with one tweet. Don't confuse being woke with being reckless and ill-advised. In a volatile world, of course, this was inevitable. And American-based sports leagues striving for globalization, the NBA, ravaged by geopolitical strife. Also predictable is how silver, even with the U.S. and China locked in a contentious race for world supremacy, would side with Chinese profits over American values, protecting the league's massive business interests in China, worth multiple billions, when he caved into that country's communist government after the tweet of Maury, who suddenly has become America's unlikeliest new political lightning rod. Give the man a show on CNN or something. Politicians are jumping on the NBA as anti-American and Silver as a Chinese sympathizer. And after years of critical acclaim and prosperity, the commissioner is looking flimsy while caught in the middle of a storm he didn't cause. In trying to finesse it both ways, apologizing to the Chinese, yet defending Maury's right to free speech in America, Silver only has angered everybody across the board. Here was the commish making no friends in China.
The long-held values of the NBA are to support freedom of expression, and certainly freedom of expression by members of the NBA community. And in this case, Daryl Morey, as the general manager of the Houston Rockets, enjoys that right as one of our employees. What I also try to suggest is I understand that there are consequences from that exercise of in essence, his freedom of speech. And, you know, we will have to live with those consequences. It's my hope that for our Chinese fans and our partners in China, they will see those remarks in the context of now a three-decade, if not longer, relationship. We are not apologizing for Daryl exercising his freedom of expression. I regret, again, having communicated directly with many friends in China, that so many people are upset, including millions and millions of our fans. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we come with basketball as an opportunity to sell dreams, sell hopes, that to you know, increasingly focus on physical fitness, mental health, and to the extent that we are causing disruption in people's lives and that we are causing disharmony, that's something I regret. And so I think, as I said earlier, I don't think it's inconsistent to both be apologetic that that was the outcome of that speech, but at the same time, support Daryl's right, you know, to his freedom of expression.
He does look like a hypocrite here. Isn't the NBA about human rights and diversity when China is anything but? However, the Chinese also see right through him, and the financial backlash against the NBA has been staggering, with the league expected to lose a chunk of the 600 million TV viewers who annually watch league events in China, while commercial sponsors also are dropping ties with the Rockets, with one saying, and I quote, "The sovereignty of the motherland cannot be challenged," unquote. And to think I went to journalism school to practice sports writing and I'm talking about the sovereignty of the motherland? Yep, a Mariotti aside. And Yao Ming, who became a Hall of Famer with the Rockets, as leader of the Chinese Basketball Association, he has suspended cooperation with the Rockets. All of which is happening as James and the Lakers play two games over there against the Nets, who are owned rather inconveniently by one Joe Tsai, co-founder of Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba, who rebuked Mori for publicly addressing a, quote, third rail issue, unquote, such as Hong Kong. You got all this? But none of it is working as Hardin was hammered in the United States for pandering to the Chinese as he spoke before a preseason Rockets-Toronto Raptors series in Japan.
Yeah, we apologize. You know, we love China. We love, you know, playing there. I know for both of us individually, we go there, you know, once or twice a year. They show us the most important love. So, you know, we appreciate them as a fan base, and we love everything, you know, they're about. And you know, we appreciate the support that they give us individually and as an organization. So, you know, we love you.
As for James, he has been forced into a role of peacemaker, which is beyond his pay grade in global awareness. The only athlete I'd even think about calling on in this case is maybe Kobe Bryant, who is enormously popular in China to this day. But you know what? Knowing Kobe, he'd somehow say the wrong thing, too. And the Yankees are looking golden as they await the American League Championship Series, with really nothing to worry about other than closer Aroldis Chapman cutting his left wrist, yes, his pitching hand, on a champagne bottle that collided with his arm. He says he's fine, and he'd better be. Blessed with a lineup that resembles the Monstars from Space Jam, the Yankees got an enormous break when Houston's epic rotation was discombobulated by Zach Greinke's rough start in Game 3 against those adorable and rowdy Tampa Bay Rays, they of the major league low $64 million payroll. It forced manager A.J. Hinch in a highly debatable and risky decision to move up Justin Verlander on short rest to start Game 4, and you saw what happened. And he was shelled, as you saw, in front of an uncharacteristically raucous crowd inside that St. Petersburg Tin Can Dome, reminding us that Verlander is 36 despite his Cy Young season. Couldn't Wade Miley have started the game, A.J.? Every decision looms large in October, and like Kershaw, Greinke is a future Hall of Famer who struggles in October with an ERA over 4. And Houston's lineup every day was exposed by Tampa Bay pitching with quiet periods that suggested the Astros aren't all that after all. Meanwhile, the Yankees were watching the Astros and Rays beat up each other unexpectedly, and the Yankees will be rested and have their rotation in order for Game 1 on Saturday after Luis Severino pitched a gem to eliminate the Twins, who never ever will beat the Pinstripes in this or any other lifetime after scoring 7 runs in 3 games. They haven't beaten the Yankees in eons. Is this finally the season, after 10 years of waiting, that the Yankees win it all? Heaven help us. The reality of Baker Mayfield is self-evident. If he's going to call himself dangerous and flood our senses with TV ads and rip on every detractor in sight, then yes, he will be roundly roasted when he stinks up the joint. And oh, did he stink up the joint against the suddenly formidable 4-0 49ers who joined the Patriots as the NFL's only perfect teams. Jimmy Garoppolo, Tom Brady, see the symmetry. After they smothered Mayfield and the Browns with a dominant front four led by rookie savage Nick Bosa. And Bosa has both a long wingspan and memory. He mimicked Mayfield with a flag-planting pose, recalling the flag that Mayfield planted in Ohio Stadium after beating Bosa and the Buckeyes a couple of years ago. Listen to Bosa chirp as the 49ers prepare for a showdown against the sputtering L.A. Rams.
I was kind of trying to talk. I don't usually talk, but this game, he had it coming. So, but he didn't say one word back, so...
What would you say, just an example?
Oh, I was just screaming his name, like, Baker, Baker, you good? Come on, pick it up. We want a challenge.
So this was throughout the game, not just on
the Yeah, and he was just looking at me like...
Can you tell when a quarterback is starting to rush things a little more and get out of rhythm, and did you see some of that tonight?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how anybody thought he would be able to see over Eric and Buck, but he was panicking. He was double-clutching, rolling back and forth. We had him rattled all game.
And he makes a good point here. Mayfield, when a soft offensive line forces him to release the ball quickly, will have difficulty at 6 feet one seeing over and contending with the likes of 6'7 DeForest Buckner and 6'8 Eric Armstead and 6'4 Bosa and 6'3 D Ford, as will Jared Goff this Sunday and many other NFL quarterbacks. But they don't chirp like Mayfield chirps, and he's not getting help from his outmatched rookie head coach Freddie Kitchens, who is not maximizing Mayfield's plethora of weapons, including Odell Beckham Jr. Ever see two commercial superstars like Mayfield and Beckham make such sporadic impact in uniform? They get all the attention, and then they win, they lose, they win, they lose, and when they lose, they suck. Here's Mayfield starting to sound like a broken record.
I mean, I'm not hitting the panic button. I think for us, it's just, we know the problem. We know we have to, be better. We just have to do better. And when you play a great team, you have to eliminate mistakes. You just have to. We know exactly what we need to do. We need to play well. We need to do our job each and every play and not lose sight, the goal.
Which brings us to week 6 with compelling matchups everywhere, none bigger than the 49ers here in Los Angeles and a renewal of that ancient rivalry. Sean McVay keeps trying to give a bigger workload to Todd Gurley, but he's still hell-bent on turning Goff into a superstar, and it's just not happening yet. The 49ers are poised for a shootout, and yes, San Francisco stays unbeaten atop the NFC West. 49ers 33, Rams 30. Seattle at Cleveland. Life gets no easier for the Browns with Seattle coming to the lakefront. And if Patrick Mahomes remains vulnerable to hits and keeps limping around, you know what that means. Russell Wilson, who became the league's highest paid player in the offseason, might justify the money with the league MVP award. No? Look at the other $30 million a year quarterbacks. Goff is not worthy of that money yet. Ben Roethlisberger is out for the year. Matt Ryan is regressing. Carson Wentz is getting there. And Aaron Rodgers is managing a Green Bay offense more than he's carrying it. Russell has 12 touchdown passes, 0 picks, a 126.3 passer rating, and has completed 73% of his passes. MVP. I know it's early, but right now, kind of case closed. And he will teach Baker some lessons on Sunday as Seahawks coach Pete Carroll continues to marvel at the quarterback he created.
I think it's what stood out is his consistency. He's making the same plays 1 week to the next. They're just kind of going one to the other. And so it's his level of play that really is showing up. That isn't dependent on who he's playing. We've had interesting chances already where we've thrown the ball a lot and not thrown the ball as much, in different games, different weeks, and he continues to find enough opportunities to be productive. I mean, to have a game that made such an impression and he only threw the ball 27 times, or 23 times, 23 times, that's pretty remarkable, really. So his consistency is there. His confidence, his command has been the same each week to week, and so it's exciting to see. It's something I'm not surprised. I just wanting to see when he's really going to take over and really own it, and I think that's we're seeing that from last year and this year that he's getting into that mode.
Before long, Browns owner Jimmy Haslam and general manager John Dorsey might be asking this. If they can't stand the heat, is it time to get out of the kitchens? Seahawks 28, Browns 20. Houston at Kansas City. This has the potential to be an all-time quarterbacking yardage orgy. Mahomes versus the nearly as magical Deshaun Watson in a new age extravaganza. But both have something troubling in common. Neither precious quarterback is being protected by his offensive line. Mahomes at Holmes, that was a pun intended, terrible, I know, makes one more big play than Watson in a wild one where a betting man certainly should take the over of 55.5, and I don't talk over-unders. Usually Chiefs, 41 Texans, 40! New Orleans at Jacksonville. The Saints have been brilliant, almost miraculously so, since losing Drew Brees, which speaks to the offensive aptitude of one Sean Payton, the league's best head coach who doesn't wear a hoodie. Wait a minute, Payton does wear a hoodie. All right, so, all right, second best to Belichick. And until Jalen Ramsey stops hijacking the Jaguars with his trade demand and quit job, Jacksonville cannot win these kind of games, especially with Teddy Bridgewater hitting his stride and cult hero Gardner Minshew spitting up turnovers as he continues to grow that mustache. Saints 23, Jags 17. Yes, Kirk Cousins became the first quarterback ever to receive a congratulatory call from the President of the United States for winning a regular season NFL game. Donald Trump calling Kirk Cousins. Does Trump not have more important... Oh, that's right. I'm violating my own rule. But the Eagles cannot stop the pass, and because they'll be focusing on Dalvin Cook out of the backfield, they will dare Cousins to throw inside the Minneapolis Dome. And yes, Philly makes Kirk Cousins great again, if only for a day. Vikings 27, Eagles 18. Detroit at Green Bay. The Lions are better than we thought, but the Packers are one of the NFC's most complete teams. And the more dangerous Aaron at the moment is Jones, the running back, not Rodgers. Packers 26, Lions 20. Carolina versus Tampa Bay in London Town. Yep, another weekend, another long-ass NFL excursion to Europe. This time it's the Panthers and Bucks. And count on Christian McCaffrey to dazzle the Brits with maybe another somersault or two into the end zone while Kyle Allen keeps Cam Newton as an afterthought against the NFL's worst pass defense. Panthers 33, Bucks 17. Washington at Miami, or if you'd prefer, the Farts and Giggles Bowl. As Jay Gruden returns to a saner life after being mercifully fired by Daniel Snyder at 5 a.m., mind you, the 0-5 Redskins actually have a shot against the 0-4 uber-tanking Dolphins, who are allowing 40 points and 472 yards a game. Word in D.C. says the rest of the season is a trial for 34-year-old offensive coordinator Kevin O'Connell, whom the Redskins don't want to let get away after McVay, Matt LaFleur, and Kyle Shanahan got away to win head coaching NFL success. Is O'Connell sure he wants that job? Lincoln Riley certainly doesn't want it, and Jim Harbaugh, for all the desperation he faces at Michigan, would choke Snyder in the first week. Is it possible Snyder can just fire himself? For now, as Dwayne Haskins remains on the bench, Redskins 30, Dolphins 20. Dallas at New York Jets. If Lincoln Riley is headed anywhere, it's to Dallas, where he would inherit Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott and all of that talent. Jason Garrett, I think, will be fired this year, but not this Sunday. Cowboys 40, Jets 3. And in games worthy only of picking a winner without elaborate analysis, we'll take the Ravens over the winless Bengals, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals over the Falcons and their endangered coach Dan Quinn, the Broncos winning two straight against bad Marcus Mariota and the Titans, and the Chargers prolonging the Steelers' misery against undrafted rookie quarterback Devlin Hodges, who... The Titans, by the way, signed Mr. Double Doink himself, Cody Parkey, to replace Cairo Santos, who missed four kicks last week. Why would you replace poison with more poison? On to college football, where the politics of the sport, namely pro-SEC bias, mandate that Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley not slip up in the regular season. Their chances are better thanks to an improved defense under new coordinator Alex Grinch, who should be the Grinch who steals the Red River Rival game against Texas on Saturday. The Sooners are playing hard and flying to the football, making life easier for Jalen Hurts, and they will avenge last year's loss to Texas as Hurts remains squarely in the Heisman Trophy hunt. And for LSU to remain in the college football playoff hunt and Joe Burrow to vault over stiff competition to win the stiff arm Heisman, the Tigers need one of these classic Death Valley at night victories over an overachieving Florida team with a very strong defense. Here's LSU coach Ed Ogeron, and I play his audio bite only because I like hearing his Cajun rasp.
You know, we know how it is in the SEC. I mean, it's going to be like this every week from now on. It's going to be a challenge, but I think these guys are going to be up for it. Or are we going to score the same amount of points that we've been scoring every week? I don't know. We may not. The object is always to win the game and to play a full team. So I think that our guys understand the challenge. Our guys understand the teams that we have played. Some of them are not as strong as the ones we're going to play, but we've been gearing up for this and we're ready.
I say Burrow will be too much for the Gators as we await the LSU showdown against Alabama in Tuscaloosa next month. And before anybody starts calling Zion Williamson a more dynamic dunker than even Julius Erving, Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, Vince Carter, and all the rest, please keep something in mind. It's the NBA preseason, okay? It's akin to a playground game. But damned if Zion's dunks haven't dazzled us so far. As Williamson faces the pressure of becoming an immediate NBA superstar at 19, even as Pelicans coach Alvin Gentry begs us not to compare him to LeBron. Here was Zion talking of his thunder dunk over Atlanta seven-footer Damian Jones. I saw it. It happened.
Hey, can you tell us about the first dunk over a seven-footer, no less?
I just saw the lane open up, and this isn't high school or college anymore. You got to go up strong. So I went up strong, and I was able to finish.
Zion.
Get used to these questions about the dunks, which will come often as Gentry emphasizes a wild horse pace for this uniquely watchable team 30 times on national TV. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Kudos to ESPN president Jimmy Pitaro for sticking to his principles. He will not have on-air talent discussing politics, including the Daryl Morey China fiasco. When Stephen A. Smith rather astonishingly brought up the Israel-Palestine conflict on First Take, that's what I said, Stephen A. The network went straight to a commercial break. It was real awkward but necessary. I'm glad they did it, because who the hell knows what Stephen A. would have said about Israel and Palestine. It's not that I'm defending ESPN's multi-billion dollar relationship with the NBA. As you know, I loathe those relationships. It's that sports media people, like athletes, generally are intellectually unequipped to be discussing any kind of politics with authority, much less the Israel-Palestine conflict. It wasn't long ago when Major League Baseball condemned all things Las Vegas for its seedy gambling element. But now the sport is so desperate that the so-called Commissioner Rob Manfred is warning Oakland officials that the A's could relocate to Vegas, like the Raiders, if local politics keep getting in the way of a new ballpark. But first, Mr. Commish, don't you need a ballpark in Vegas? Who's financing it? Certainly not John Fisher, the A's owner. And certainly the Raiders aren't going to let the A's use their stadium, given the contentiousness between those franchises. And it has to be a retractable dome, knowing the summer heat in the desert. It's going to take more than rare big crowds in October for the A's and the Rays to make it in their markets. Problem is, there's no certain place to go. The Rays, this Montreal thing is weird, and the A's in Vegas, it's not going to happen. It's an idle threat by a commissioner who is pretty much in quicksand at this point. Only 4 months ago, David Ortiz was shot and severely wounded while enjoying himself at a bar in the Dominican Republic. It's a miracle that he's back so quickly on the Fox Sports set in L.A. talking baseball. Here he is.
And I have a problem with power pitchers going in 3 days of rest. I mean, he's 36. He's not 26. Mm. That's a big deal. I mean, age catch up on you. I'm not saying that that's his case because it seems like he's like the wine. He get better and better and better. But remember, as a hitter, when you see guys like that, 3 days is different. It make you better hitter. It make you make better adjustment. You know, and I know he probably gonna come with a different approach against these guys because he might feel like his power is not there tonight because he didn't rest enough to be out there pitching. But I'm a little concerned about that.
I'm still skeptical about these circumstances and whether Ortiz was the actual target or shot by mistake, but who isn't thrilled to see his public presence once again? And you knew this was inevitable. The lovable lunkhead Rob Gronkowski joining Fox as an NFL analyst. I would expect more Tony Siragusa here than Tony Romo or Chris Collinsworth or Troy Aikman, but this should end all talk that Gronk would return to the Patriots this season. Besides, have you seen how much weight he has lost? All together now. And primal scream therapy isn't usually the answer in the 21st century, but the Philadelphia Flyers have installed a rage room inside their arena, allowing fans to enter a cave-like room and use baseball bats, sledgehammers, and hockey sticks to take out their wrath on TVs, dishware, and bottles. They're actually going to buy this stuff every... What? Am I reading this properly? Obviously, not a good idea. Somebody is going to get hurt, and you're encouraging hockey fans to act out their rage inside an arena?
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Shame on me, yes me, for continuing to perpetuate the public presence of Conor McGregor, who clearly is in the conversation as the biggest creep in sports. He cannot stay out of trouble, punching an old man for no reason in a Dublin bar, smashing somebody's cell phone outside a Miami nightclub, under investigation in New York for alleged sexual assault, using a battering ram to attack a bus full of fighters in Brooklyn, on and on and on. And the apocalypse truly is upon us amid all of that when Mike Tyson, of all people, goes on ESPN and gives Conor pointed life advice. That would be Mike Tyson, the convicted rapist.
You know, Conor has to look inside himself and say, and do this. What happened? Why am I the way I am? And how do I stop this from continuing to be? Listen, we don't know how to handle this stuff. We got millions of dollars. We never had this. Our family never had this. We never been around this life. How all of a sudden that people, you start fighting, doing something you love to do, and you do it easy, and it looks easy, and all of a sudden they give you a lot of money for doing it. But you don't have no restraint. You don't have no control. You don't know what to do. You give it away. You buy people gifts that don't deserve these gifts. You just don't know what to do with it. You feel you don't deserve it.
Tyson served 3 years in prison. I'll never forget being there the day he was released somewhere in rural Indiana. Yet because McGregor is protected by the UFC boss Dana White, I gather he could axe murder 5 people and not do any jail time. Which means White is enabling a societal menace for profit instead of listening to McGregor's public cry for help.
As far as like my fellow colleagues, I deserve to be called out on it. I deserve to be called out on that behavior. It's just unacceptable. There's no excuse to it. I deserve everything that comes my way with it. I need to just stop reacting to the bait. I've got to ask, like, people are trying to bait me into things. Am I the fish or am I the whale? I must be calm. I must be zen. I must lead by example. There's so many people looking up to me. How can I react in this way? I need to get a hold of this. And I'm working very hard to do this.
Soon enough, I'm sure we'll be hearing about McGregor's next fight because, as White says, it's his passion in life. Well, my passion in life is convincing UFC fans who fill taverns around the world every weekend that they are watching a death sport involving very sick people. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.